We bought this photograph from a local photographer. He specializes in photographs of San Francisco, and he had this super cool, it's a triptych, you know, three separate photos of the skyline of San Francisco with the sunrise and all the lights and everything, and it's just gorgeous. And so I just had to have that. So we just recently bought that like a month ago, and it's one of these like statement pieces. It's like right above our couch. We've got all three of these huge, and it worked out great because we've got lights that can shine right down on it. I just love it.
Isn't it great when you find a piece and it just like it hits you in that way?
You're
like, it doesn't matter how much this is. I need to have it. I need this every day to see it to inspire me in this way that it inspires me.
And it's hard to come across those things because we'll go to art fairs and things, and most of the art I see, I like, but not enough to actually buy. You know, it's like, oh, that's nice, or I like it, but it's just it has to have that deeper. You know, I guess something hits you emotionally with it. It just resonates.
Do you have any problem posting like irrelevant things as well, just as easily mixed in with these beautiful pieces on your walls? Do you have problem also just like, oh, and this is also a, you know, weird random thing? Because that's...
Well, it's sort of like I've been low-key trying to get rid of stuff on our walls because...
You feel they're cluttered.
It's a good thing my wife doesn't listen to this podcast because we had this wall, and it was like this, I guess you would call it a maximalist wall. And it was just so many pictures all over the wall that she put there. And, you know, individually the pictures are nice, but when you have a whole sea of them, it's, you can't see one in particular for the whole, you know, the forest.
The trees for the forest.
I'm mixing all kinds of metaphors here. But it was just too much on there. And so for a while, I've been trying to just casually say, you know, maybe it's time we just get some nice artwork and put up there and everything. I said, but, you know, that would mean we'd have to probably move some of these. I was trying to be as tactful as possible. But anyways, we saw this triptych and we both liked it. And so she cleaned out all those photos and all those pictures and everything that was there. But we must have been like 50 on that wall. It was just this wall of stuff.
Was there the option of finding another wall to like, hey, we'll just put all these on the wall in the office?
So it's like one of these things that we never really had a thorough discussion on it. I felt like she understood that we had used up that. The time of that has expired on that wall.
I got
it was
it.
Time to get something new for it.
So you like quietly acquiesced and like we accepted what was going to happen.
I guess so, yeah. But you know, it's I guess, and it's got to be frustrating living with a minimalist. And she's pretty good. She doesn't, you know, hoard stuff or anything. But somebody used the term intentionalist. I heard recently, and I like that. I'd rather think that I'm more intentional about
minimal. Minimal seems like you have to keep the least amount of
right.
Something.
Like that's the goal, is to just have the least amount of stuff, and that's really not my goal. It's just to have stuff that is just more meaningful. And collections, I think, are some of the biggest problems people face in just clutter. Is just you want to start collecting things, and then everybody starts giving you more of that thing, and it just becomes a real snowball.
That ends up being a horrible trap. When you're a car person, and then for like 20 years, all of your birthday gifts are like, it's a shirt with a car on it. Hey, I got you a model car. Hey, I know you like cars, so here's a jacket with a car on it. And just like,
it's true.
Becomes part of you. So you get all, well, we talk about it through some of our decluttering videos, how it's difficult. Like that's the most difficult stuff to get rid of, because it's like, oh my gosh, my friend gave me this thinking I was a really big car fan, even though I'm not much of a car fan. Yeah. Problem. But you're a person who moves on from those things really easily.
I try to.
That's
yeah,
just
this
default
is
with you, right? Did you ever, was there a come to Jesus moment?
I don't know, to coin a phrase. That's a good question. How did it come about? How did I end up being this way? And I don't really can't pinpoint any one particular time, but there's just something about maybe over time I realized that getting rid of stuff that I don't use or don't need felt so freeing and felt so like weight off my shoulders just to not have this stuff around. And so then it just became, you know, it felt better and better the more I did it.
Is it fair to say that mindset got amplified when you like started eating better, taking care of yourself better, stopped drinking, all of those other things kind of that you went through has made it where it's more of a finely attuned skill for you?
I think so. This sounds like a therapy session, and I think you're right, though. And maybe those are all kind of connected, this desire to let go of the past and to not find such importance in objects and to try to find our memories are in our head, not in things, you know?
It's fun. I didn't mean to talk about this, but this was something I've wanted to talk to you about for such a long time, because you're a bit of an inspiration as far as your wellness journey is concerned. And I know that you not only have like good routines, and now that I'm kind of learning these new routines and whatnot, I find it's easier to part with things and to clean and to be more efficient at like doing these things that were once labored or easy to like kind of ignore. And now I almost get joy out of it because I understand the benefits of freeing yourself from this stuff, like surrounding yourself with all of your old memories. Were all of the pictures on the wall photographs, just out of curiosity, or was it a mixture of like artwork and stuff?
It was mostly just like artwork prints and things. So not like valuable artwork or anything, but it was just all sorts of things from trips and things that we'd done. So it was just a big hodgepodge of stuff. And, you know, the more I've been thinking about my minimalism or intentionalism, I guess, I kind of wonder if when we talk about this and when people in general talk about minimalism, if it comes across as sort of an elitism kind of thing. In other words, I can afford to be a minimalist.
Yeah.
Because when I think about, I watch like hoarders and these shows and everything, and they're almost always people who are hoarding this stuff are usually poor. And so it's like everything they have, you never know, you know, their mindset is, well, I may need this someday. I've got to keep this. This is important. And so I kind of feel as if in some sense I'm in a privileged position to be able to get rid of things and to not have things.
And right now it's like there's the dudes named the minimalists and there's the Netflix show, and it is kind of a thing where it's like not classist, but it's like it's really only accessible to people who have such a plethora of things to have like a stuff. This is our stuff room. This is our extra room. This is our bonus room. You know,
I don't have to worry about I may need it someday.
Yeah.
So it's easier for me to get rid of stuff. And I think, well, if I need it, I'll just buy it again. Which isn't really a good attitude to have, I suppose, in some sense. That sort of is wasteful, but
it ends up proving the point. And again, the minimalists said that, I think, in a recent video. And it's not like I follow them, but Melissa was on their podcast and we got a chance to meet them. They're really cool guys and all of the rest. But it is kind of in a place now where like minimalism is a thing where you can only access it when you have too much stuff. So therefore that term has kind of been attached with that and these guys and the whole fact that it's like a movement or whatever. And to your point, maybe changing something to like intentional, that can have a varied amount. That means it's still in control as far as I'm concerned, but I have more than, you know, just the stark walls that Kanye West has in his house, or like those people who live in like cement floor homes.
I sometimes worry that I come across as like a preachy or something, like you just need to get rid of more stuff, you'd be happier, you know, and that's really not the case at all. And everybody's experience is going to be different. It's just for me, I just love living with kind of just what I actually
use. And
you've
managed to do it with your wardrobe. And as much as I embody the minimalist lifestyle as much as I can, a curated minimalist lifestyle, I couldn't imagine not having much in the way of clothes. I just love what that is.
I know. I used to have lots of different colors, and I just kind of got to this thing where it's like now I'm just wearing black. I have mostly black and gray clothing. Is pretty much all I wear.
So is it, you consider it a lack of definition through your clothing, or has this become the definition of your clothing? As in, like, is this your style? So therefore you just like double down on one style.
Yeah, I think it is. I feel like it's a sort of just my style. It's easy for me to think about. And when I'm trying to make purchases, I can just, okay, I'm going to try on only the black shirts. So I don't have to see how, I don't know. It just sort of makes things simpler for me.
Do you buy in bulk when there's just sales and stuff? No. Because that goes against, do you buy anything in bulk?
Other than just like Costco, you know, if we buy some stuff for the house, detergent or whatever,
but like, I guess yeah,
you would
staples.
Call that bulk. Yeah. As far as clothing goes, it has to be, for me, it's all about fit. Mm. I just need it to fit good. Gone are the days when I can just wear a graphics, you know, AC/DC t-shirt that's like billowing and, you know, one of those large shirts they shoot out of guns or cannons. They always fit horribly.
Like a shirt with a beer label on it or something.
No, yeah, I got that. Show off the dad bod.
How would people know that you like AC/DC though if you don't walk around with a shirt?
That's right. You know, I wanted to tell you, I went through tech support hell recently. I gotta say, our tech support is like, a whole industry of tech support needs to have some sort of like internal reform where they focus on the customers and actually try to help them out. And you know what the thing, and this is what has bothered me for years, is when you call up tech support for something today, their first thing they always tell you to do, and this never works, clear your cache and delete your cookies. It never works. It doesn't do anything except make it more difficult for you to use your computer without those cookies that you've been, and those, you know, you've been establishing. So you don't have to, now every time when you go, after you delete those, then you got to re-enter all your information for every site and everything. But that just never works. They always say to do that. So on this most recent bout, the guy was like, oh, have you tried deleting your cookies? And I want you to clear your cache. And I was like, yes, I just did that. I didn't do it. And it wasn't that at all.
Thankfully, so Steve, it could have been. And then you would have looked like a fool. And they would have been like, sir, I can see your computer and I can tell that you didn't just do that and you lied to us.
You tried turning it off and turning it back on again.
How long did it take you in between picking up the phone and speaking to someone?
Well, usually I try to do the online chat.
Oh, it was all through the online chat.
First, yeah, except this one got escalated to a point where it ended up being a phone call. And so this was actually a weird thing. And this was when I set up my new website, shopwwmm.com.
Official sponsor of this episode.
And for some reason, I wasn't able to access my website, my own website. And I just kept getting this malware phishing alert. And it was like, what the hell? I had just bought this domain and I was setting up the website. And so I just kept trying and trying. And so I called up GoDaddy where the hosting is. I'm like, look, I just bought this domain. What's going on with that? And they're like, I don't know. Everything looks okay to us. So I thought, well, maybe this is like a Shopify thing, because I was setting up that website through them. And they're like, nah, everything looks fine. And then in fact, once I was like, well, I'll just make it live. Let's see if you could see this. Everybody could see it, but me. I could not access my own website. So then I had this brilliant idea. And see, this is why I think troubleshooting on your own sometimes works the best as well. Because nobody suggested this. I thought, well, because I couldn't access it on my laptop, my desktop, or my phone. But then I thought, what if I turn off Wi-Fi and just use my cellular service. Boom.
There it was. It.
So that told me that this was an ISP problem. This was something with Comcast, which is the big, huge conglomerate here who sells you your internet service. So luckily I have a business account, which is, man, if you're ever going to get high speed internet, I mean, just go with the business, because you get so much better treatment than you do.
They treat you like the business. Mm.
Yes. And they actually answer the phones, and you deal with somebody who kind of knows what they were doing. And so it turned out to be this weird thing that it was blocking that site, and there was this security edge that they have on I could access myself, and I tried to unblock it that way. That wouldn't work. So they actually had to keep escalating this to some guy at the top in some golden office, you know, who knew the inside, you know, magic to make this thing work. And he was like, ah, here's the problem, let me reset this for you. And he fixed it. But here's the thing, is now I got the same damn problem again I set up my old website, woodworkingformeremortals.com. I thought I'm just going to forward the whole thing to my new website. No problem. Go to GoDaddy. They have a forwarding thing there. You set up the new website. Boom, it should forward. It's not giving me the phishing warning anymore, but it's giving me, it just times out trying to get to it. But I ask other people to try it, and they're like, yeah, I can get to it just fine. But now, when I switch over to my cell service, I can't access it. So I just don't know. I'm just so frustrated with this shit.
It sounds like you need help from the second sponsor of this episode, NordVPN, who can provide you with... it's really funny that you say that, because I was having a business meeting yesterday, and we were talking about how... now on YouTube, there's the merch, and you can associate your own merch with your own store. Now, not only can you include it in the end cards of the video, now there's an actual integration with the store, the shop, and the actual player or something like that. However, us fantastic chilly folks here in the north, in Canada, can't access any of this. So I can see it when I upload a video, I can add products to the video, but when I see it, I don't see any of the results because none of it is displayed for Canadians. So so it's a huge challenge, because we actually make a considerable amount of money from this, and I contemplate, it's like, oh hey, I should like drive to like Buffalo or Niagara, like somewhere close, just like rent a hotel room for a day, go and like go check it out, go see what everything looks like, do all the work I need to do, and then just come back. And my friend Luke was like, well, why don't you just get NordVPN? He's like, I use NordVPN because there's this silly little thing with on an American site, I need to see it like this, so I need to pick up a VPN from and I was shocked that NordVPN has a purpose in this world, but indeed. So go to NordVPN.
That's a ringing endorsement.
.com/ChadAndSteve have a podcast, and there'll be no page there. But VPN actually might solve that issue for you.
Oh, I should try that out and see what's going on. I don't know. This kind of stuff just drives me. And then I've been hearing from people also. I've been getting comments on YouTube video telling me the link doesn't work anymore to something, you know, that they, because each hundreds of videos, I'll have links to various things on my website. And so I'm getting some comments from, so it's just this weird sporadic thing. It's very frustrating. I did the chat with GoDaddy, and they said, well, it can take up to 72 hours to propagate. Mm-hmm. And this has been like 5 days now. So it has had time to propagate.
It's had time. Propagating is done. And I've cleared the cache, damn it. Yeah. I have a question for you. What hand do you wear a watch on?
Left.
Really? Why do you say that so confidently?
I don't wear a watch these days. I haven't in quite a while. But when I did wear a watch, and I used to wear a watch daily, probably until I got a phone, really, is when I just kind of stopped wearing a watch. I look at my earliest videos and I was wearing a watch. But I don't know. I just, when I was a boy and got my first watch, for some reason I was told to wear it on my left wrist. I don't know why that is.
Did you ever have an earring in your life?
On the left side.
So
well, that was because you're gay if you wear it on the right. Well, remember they put meaning on the which ear it was on back then.
So I like wearing my watch on my right wrist, and I'm like,
you're gay.
I obviously am gay. So I went to the internet to be like, am I gay? Because turns out I'm not. The main reason why is because traditionally the more less dominant hand, so therefore you would create less damage to the watch, was what I heard. So they're like traditionally left, but the answer apparently, according to the internet, is your non-dominant hence why we automatically think the left.
But
I'm right-handed, and I like wearing a watch. And speaking of customer service, I bought a nice watch a long, long time ago. It's one of the first things that I got myself when I first got like just some good extra spending money to buy like a you've made it type of gift for myself. So I bought myself at the time an $800 watch, which was crazy. Which is super crazy because a good watch these days is like $10,000.
A lot more than that.
Or like $150,000 for a watch. Anyways, so I get this great watch and it's fantastic and I wear it. And then I stop wearing it because I carry my phone everywhere. And now it's this clunky kind of thing and it kind of seems like a relic of the past. So it just went away for a long period of time. And then the battery died in it. And I needed to get the battery fixed. And at the same time, I was like, you know what? I want to get away from an analog watch. And I think I want to get a digital watch. Because if I get a smartwatch, it will do the job of tracking all of my steps and my sleep and like all of the other stuff that I want it to do. So therefore, I can stop with what I consider a dumb attachment to carrying my phone around, which is I like it because it registers my things and I keep like whatever. If I had this on my wrist, I wouldn't carry my phone around. So I'm like, well, in order to buy that. So the watch that I have that I'm holding up for all of those people who are watching on a podcast, it's like it's a Tag Heuer watch. And the smart Tag Heuer watch. I'm a very big fan of this particular type of watch. So I would probably get the smart version. And the smart version is like $3,500, but you can get any face you want and you can change the color and it's a smart watch and it'll, you know, help me get rid of my phone and rely da 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 da. So I was like, all right, in order to get that, I need to sell this watch. I'll sell this watch, take that money, put it towards the other watch, and then treat myself to the other watch, which is ultimately going to get me away from my phone and technology and all of the rest. So I'll lean into a bit of smart technology to alleviate the picking up my phone to do something that I want to do and then getting distracted by all of the other stuff that's on my phone. So I send my watch to Tag, which is like literally in Switzerland or whatever. So it takes like 3 weeks to get there. And then they send a quote back because I'm like, I want to sell the watch. So could you just change the battery and then repressurize it? For those of people who have watches where you can dive with it, you have to either pressurize it or you can just change the battery and not pressurize it. That's a lot cheaper. But in order to repressurize it so you can dive below 150 meters or something like that and use the watch for its intended purposes, you have to pressurize it. Anyways, long story short. I'm like, good. Could you? I'm trying to sell the watch, so could you get it just up to a nice condition for me? So they sent, the thing, and 4 weeks later, they send me a thing back, and the thing says $475, which is like 17,000 Canadian dollars, just to change the battery. And they were also like, we noticed some scuffs which you would definitely want to buff out, and we will shine the crown, and we will whatever, they will do whatever, and they will make it whatever. For I'm like, no, I can't do that. I mean, like, I'm hoping to sell the watch for 500 bucks or something like that. So I'm like, just send it back to me, please. I'm not interested in anything that you guys are offering me. So I take it to another store, just random jewelry store owned by some guy, and the guy had eyepiece, and he's like, oh, I'll change the battery. He's like, I can't repressurize it, but I'll just change the battery. It was like $25 and I got the watch. And then as I was driving home, I was with the watch, and it was at that moment that I decided that I was going to keep my watch, because the watch is analog. And the whole rub of the story was I was literally just moving the distraction and the technology, and I was making an excuse. So I think this is also full circle to the intentional purchasing. It was my most recent example of like, wow, I really now do not want that. That's the complete opposite of what I want. And it made me double down and like love this watch so much more. So for like $35, I end up getting a watch back. I can tell the time. I can get rid of my phone because I'm not going to be like, I need these other things, because I actually don't think I need to keep track of my steps. Am I wrong, Steve? Do I really, at the end of the day, need to keep going?
Yeah, I'm kind of like, just walk.
And should that ultimately, really I feel like I live in a world where I'm compelled to do that and make that purchase because I should feel like, and I guess that's what I'm getting at. Like it's like I felt like I needed to do that because I needed to keep track. And then I just kept going back all of the different logical reasons I had to whatever. And then they all seemed so like banal and against what ended up being.
I think that that's a good case that you make for buying things that you're actually going to be using and that can actually bring value to your life. Because I think we buy things. Okay, so I've actually been considering making a video on, have woodworking videos been replaced by tool buying videos? And I almost think that we're at that point where it's really tipped. There was like most of the videos now when you're looking for woodworking information are just guys selling tools. And they do really well. And it's just because people have this need to just have more and more of these things. And especially when it's related to your hobby, it's like, well, this is going to make my hobby better. I'm going to enjoy myself more. And so these guys are just making video after video after video, selling third-party tools. A lot of cases, most of the times, these aren't sponsored videos. They're affiliate video. So the tool companies are smart. They're like, okay, we'll do this affiliate program thing. You get a cut of every tool you sell, and we can just step back and just let the profits roll in. So these guys are just doing nothing but just promoting tools. And it's all because of these people watching the videos who just want more and more of this stuff, when you really can get by and do woodworking just fine with either what you already have or less than what you have.
And I'm sure everybody listening who is in whatever niche they are in feels the exact same way. I've been talking about it with a few people who kind of understand the idea behind it, but I'm calling it self-aware content. Like, it's content that you know why you're making it, and it's not the same reason as the content that you were making that attracted people to you in the first place. People off jumping the shark, selling out, like, call it what you want. But there's a point where your original quote-unquote art, it is art, 1,000% art, no quotes needed. The art that you originally presented out there had no awareness to it. You were doing that for the sake of a woodworking video. Now a woodworking video needs to be supported by, because it takes money to run this channel, guys. So like we keep, it kind of goes back to the watch thing, doesn't it? Like it's amazing the stuff we tell ourselves so that we'll either continue to consume or make an excuse to get new stuff. And the more I realize that I save everything now. It's not concerning, but like I'm very interested in the zero waste. I love that thought, just being able to escape ordering something and then it coming in an Amazon box with air-filled pockets inside another box and that has styrofoam in it. And at sometimes I've taken out the actual product and one of the art projects I have in my head is literally taking a product and then showing the amount of packaging and other stuff that it takes to like whatever. And it's like we're all compelled to do it this way because it needs to be faster, it needs to be shipped to my house, so that needs another buy, and we just keep compounding the consumption that way. I talk to you because you're naturally probably have like a filter for this type of stuff when you're out and about.
I was reading an article recently about the kind of some science-y technology surveys, or not surveys, research that's been going on surrounding recycling and how basically it's created more problems than it's solving. It's because it's giving companies kind of a way out, because the whole idea of reduce, reuse, and recycle, it's that third one, recycle it. Everybody is so enamored with, and so everybody, it makes you feel good to know that you're putting your plastic water bottle into the blue recycle bin. But it's really the reduce is the most important thing to do, and that's the thing that's been overlooked. And it's the companies are producing more plastic than ever right now because they know consumers have a way to kind of atone for buying these things in almost a spiritual sense of like, well, dropping it into this blue container. The problem is most of that stuff that people are, quote, recycling isn't recyclable. And so you're just kind of dumping anything into there. It's got a little shred of plastic on, well, dump it in there. And so none of this stuff is actually getting recycled, but it's encouraging manufacturers to increase the amount of packaging on this stuff that we don't need. I just bought, and you know, it was interesting that you said you were thinking about shooting a video or something regarding these way things are packaged. I almost did that this week, just 2 days ago. I needed some tiny magnets to use as a latch for this little box I'm making. And these are 1/8-inch magnets. They're really tiny, smaller than a pencil eraser, you know. And so I got the box it came in, and you wouldn't believe it. The box was, I'm holding my hands up, but it's about the size of a little bit smaller than a shoebox. Was the box. And so I thought, what is this coming in the mail? And I opened it up, and it's got those huge plastic bubble wraps, the big bubble wrap kind that you have to pop before you can throw them away. And then underneath that was this little box, little white box. And I had to open that up. And inside of that was the plastic envelope containing the magnets, which was the magnet. I mean, itself is so tiny. It's smaller than a SIM card, you know, I mean, it's like really tiny. And I think, why do they need this many layers of boxes? And I know there's probably some logistical reason that Amazon has to, the robots need to handle it in some way or something. But all they needed to do was to take those magnets and drop them in an envelope.
Yes. Seal the envelope, put a small sticker on the top, and then have the delivery truck be more designed for lots of small packages as opposed to big boxes.
They literally could have put it in an envelope and stuck a stamp on it and sent it through the regular postal service. I don't know. It was the most ridiculous packaging I've ever had. I mean, I get a lot of ridiculous packaging, but that was one of the worst. And
we're so numb to it now.
No, but you know, I feel good about myself because I go, I can put this right in the recycle bin. And it's not getting recycled
at all. I Clean My Space have wanted to for a very long time do like a long form piece on just the misconceptions, the aspirational thoughts behind recycling. And I think it was Penn and Teller's Bullshit did an episode on this. And that's what first planted the seed. And then there's also a good YouTuber, Climate Town, Raleigh, I don't remember his name is. There's a YouTube channel called Climate Town, which did a deep dive into recycling and whatnot. And the majority, like you have to make sure the little recycling thing at the bottom has the right number to it. Vast majority of people throw all sorts of stuff that should, or like it's like a box, but inside the box they've stuffed some plastic and they won't know because they just dumped that. Like we all do it. And we all think we're doing it. And to your point, it takes away from the, hey, you're bringing this in just because there's a convenient way to get rid of this, you know, shouldn't make you so flippantly just kind of like create that mentality. But I take the boxes and I grind them up and I mix them with grass clippings and I make compost, or I'll flatten them out and I'll use them as weed barrier in my garden, or I'll find, sometimes you'll get a really nice box. Sometimes someone will send you a really nice box and it's plain and you can like just take it and you have yourself a nice box and you could write crayons on it and take all the kids' crayons and put, like, I mean, there's so many different things you could do versus that damaging mindset of like, well, it's in the blue bin, so it's not in the garbage bags anymore.
If you go to like the restaurants where they have like three bins, and you know, you're always kind of confused, like, well, should this go in this one or this one? And nobody really spends a lot of time thinking it through. And so I am pretty sure all three of those have about an equal amount of garbage in each one. I think it just kind of evens out between all three of those, but it makes the restaurant feel good. It makes customers, when they come in, think, well, this restaurant's really doing something. But at the end of the day, all of that junk is pretty much going to the landfill, because recycled stuff has to be sorted by hand.
Yes.
There's like people on conveyor belts literally picking out the things that is actually recyclable. So yeah, it's reduce and reuse is really what we've got to do. And I've actually kind of thinking now, when I need to buy some more clothes, is just going to a secondhand store, because I'm pretty sure I can find stuff that's going to fit me, and it's going to save me some money. I don't like spending money any more than the next guy. And it's kind of silly to spend, you know, $45 on a t-shirt or something. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense. But I just really do think that this reduction is got to be something that everybody is mindful of. We have to reduce the amount of stuff we're creating.
This new, like, secondhand market, so like direct selling, the Facebook marketplace thing during the pandemic, with Riley heavily being into Paw Patrol, and either faced with collect them all, yeah. Probably, I don't know, well over $1,000, well over $1,000 if you're to get the, you know, the thing and the super trooper thing and the this and the all of the attachments. Well over $1,000, like if you were to go and fish it out new, or like piecemealed over your family buying gifts and da da da. And we found someone who had like the whole set, and kids too old. Everything was in great condition. It cost $45. There was no packaging involved, because they had already thrown the package away many years ago. And like, we just drove to someone's house and we gave them, you know, 40 right. bucks cash, and we picked it up and we put it in the trunk, and there was no box, there was no receipt, there was no
getting more life out of the product that has already been produced. The energy to produce it has already been tapped.
And now the first thing I'm thinking is about moving on from it, more so driven by the thought of wanting these toys to find themselves another three-year-old, to love them and use them and whatnot.
Yeah.
But more so, like, obviously that, what a great way, as opposed to just throwing them out, you're getting them in. Maybe I'll get $25 for them, or $20 for them, or whatever.
I kind of think that we've got to start, myself included, adopting the mindset of, if we have money, it doesn't mean we have to always spend it, and we have to spend it on new things. If we're going to a secondhand store, there shouldn't be, I have a feeling there's a little bit of a stigma, like, oh, well, that's for poor people to shop at, and that's where they get their clothes. I have money, I'm going to shop at, you know, Neiman Marcus or whatever. Yeah. And it doesn't, because the clothes, in fact, some of those clothes at the secondhand store could have come from there originally anyways. But I think we have to kind of stop any of this mentality we have around buying used things.
And I think it is changing, and it is Facebook Marketplace as making it easier. And you know what, as it just becomes more of the norm, like between us, and like parents start kind of like knowing, oh, hey, it's especially parents, obviously, because just like clothes, and just seeing it pass around. Melissa's love the stores that I'm surprised there's not way more of them, but there's probably, for very good reason, there's not way more of those types of stores that, like, we had one called Cash Converters, where you could literally just go, it's like a pawn shop, but like a more effective pawn shop, where the thought is you're not just trying to bond to get money to pay for your bond, but this is it sucks now, because when you buy a TV, you have to purchase the end life of the TV's expenses now anyway, so you are paying for it ultimately. Now it's just wasteful if you take your TV and like throw it away, or put it in a dumpster, or like do anything to just like get rid of it, let alone those large plastic. We have one of those large molded, a little tyke slide climber thing. And it's big enough to, like, if you wanted to like get it to your house, you need like a cube truck, rent a cube truck and like load it up in the cube truck. And you just see those things straight out at the curb. just because it's like, no one wants it because no one's willing to like literally right. spend the time to just come and get it and move it to another spot. And like, we literally have moved it into that being society's norm as opposed to, you know,
yeah.
thinking about.
We just have too much damn junk.
It really is the case.
Did we talk about once before on this podcast? I can't remember if we talked about this before, about this whole furniture flipping business, about people that I've seen this a lot on Instagram now is, and I'm not against furniture flipping. You buy a piece of furniture and yeah. then you resell it. But it's when they go to Goodwill. I don't know why. Somehow this just kind of bothers me. And they make a big production out of, look at that. I got this table for only $12 at Goodwill. Now I can sell it for $150 because yeah. I've put in the work. And so you're just taking something that somebody was probably destined to use for their actual apartment, who actually needed that for $12. You, being in your place of privilege, basically swoop in, buy it up, and then sell it to somebody who's willing to pay $150 for it. There's something about that that just bothers me, and I don't know if it should bother me. I mean, you're supporting Goodwill, you're doing all of that, but I kind of think, is that really the intention of this furniture that's being sold there? And I think of this differently than like Facebook Marketplace. If somebody's selling some used piece of furniture and you take it, fix it up and sell it for a profit, somehow that doesn't bother me. But it's just the Goodwill and Salvation Army. These stores to me seem to be set up to help people who need it. The people working there, the people who need those clothes and this sort of thing.
Who just only have $12 for a table.
Who need it for their house or the clothing there. So I don't know. It's one of these things that just kind of... It just seems like such a social media thing.
Well, it is. What we were talking about earlier, it's self-aware content. The reason why it rubs you the wrong way is because it's not people literally going and doing that and making their living and enjoyment off of doing that. There's this additional infection of content creating where it's like, no, it's also about like, what's going to look good? How am I going to present it? How am I going to edit this together to make it look the best for people? Yeah. So to your point, like you said right at the beginning, it's like, I have no problem if people go and find the value in getting a table, which was $12 and then selling it for $150. The problem is when you make a whole piece of content around that, and then the only real value associated with it is the success of how much I made off of the video. Like, that's what I hear sometimes, where it's like, I don't want to take on this project because you know, Mr. Beast apparently is in a position where his videos yeah. ideas cost way more than what they would. So like, at what point, Jimmy's going to find out, at what point do you have to make your content be like, no, the only reason I'm making this is because I'm looking for views. I'm thirsty for likes. I yeah. want attention, and I want people to see that I can do this, versus, I believe, your mentality and kind of my mentality, which is like, I'm doing this because this is something I enjoy, and I enjoy that other people like it and I can support myself doing this.
Yeah.
But I'm really learning how to lean into the thought of like, they're here because of what I'm doing when I do it focused on that, not when I'm like listening to all of them, because I end up disappointing the rest of them by listening. Do you know what I mean? Like, everybody yeah. thinks that they can take a subsection of like what humanity's like based upon their audience size. So if the people yeah. like this, and it literally just content takes over everything. Now it's not about really finding a cheap table and and whatever, and even being able to find a piece of content and doing that, like being able to do it for the sake of doing it and then showing the piece of content. But I think what you're driving at is we're really sick and overwhelmed with content, which is blatantly just like, the only reason influencers exist now is to like literally influence people to buy things. Like, there's no other
yeah
purpose.
And there, it's this whole kind of genre is just encouraging more people to try this, to just go to these secondhand stores, swoop up as much cheap stuff as they can, fix them up, and then resell them, because the thumbnails are all like, I went from $12 to $150, and it shows the I think that the solution here, because really, you're right, they're just making it for content. That's where they're wanting to really make the money off of these things, is the content itself, is to buy the thing, fix it up, donate it right back to the exact same store.
There you go. There you go.
You'll get even more clicks. People will be like, wow, and he, look, he actually did. Exactly. It ends up coming across as disingenuous because there was no closure like that. You were doing it for that reason. You were doing it. And people are viewing because they're lazy. And I would contend that no one would actually, aspirational, everybody would like to think that they can. This shows that they can without doing it. So this literally just plays out a scenario which like feels just relatable enough, but it, and that's where content is right now, right? Just make it just relatable enough so that all I have to do is sit on my phone and watch it, and then I can feel good enough and I know what it's like to buy a table without even doing anything, Steve.
Well, this is where I am right now, is I'm trying to get right back into making project videos. I've been doing nothing but project videos lately, and they do not perform well. This no surprise. I thought for a while there they may, but that was kind of a blip, and so it's more about continuing to do that, but in order to make that possible, selling the plans that go along with it. And I think so far that's working out pretty well. It seems to be offsetting the AdSense revenue that used to justify the cost of making a project video.
Have you thought about using the memberships program to offer like unlimited access to all of your, so like there's just like a once at like, you know, rinse and repeat $2.99 a month or however much that looks like, and someone could support you that way as opposed to doing all the individual plans. But if I'm joined there, I would get the latest plans and I would get them all free because
I've thought
supporter.
About that. I'm not quite sure how to make that work. I mean, basically, I'd like to do a Patreon type of thing as a YouTube membership program, but I don't know if that's the right thing to give away the plans for a membership, especially somebody, you know, could just jump in for 1 month, get the plans, and then bail out. And that would be kind of I guess that's a cynical way to look at it, but I guess that's sort of, it would be something if you know, I'll pay my $2.99. Now I get to download a couple $100 worth of plans and then I'm out.
I mean, you have a bunch to offer people. Anybody who gets your newsletter knows how much work and time you put into that. So I don't know if there was, I guess more so if there was just a way, I guess that's what Patreon and YouTube keep telling us anyways. People just want to support the people who clearly are doing it for the right
reasons.
I
have people sign up for my Patreon all the time. It doesn't really ever increase because people drop out too. Yeah. So it's kind of like hovered at the same number, but people are always joining, and it always kind of surprises me because I never even mention the Patreon. I don't do anything for it other than post my latest videos on there. And I always kind of feel a little guilty about that. But then, like you were saying, I guess I shouldn't feel guilty because I think it's just a way for people to just say, I support your content.
It's so tough not to want to lean into doing what everybody else is doing. But like we mentioned whatever 30 minutes ago about like woodworking channels just turning into tool sales channels. And even if you're not selling something, like the content just kind of like gets absorbed into something else.
Yeah, those the tool channels though, man, oh man. I mean, because it's everything is so timely too. Man, they're gonna have like zero evergreen content on those channels because everything is like flash deal. You wouldn't believe what I'm finding on Amazon this week only. And you know,
do you have faith that like quality cause we're in the exact same spot, just pushing out videos, which like just good, solid informational based videos, laundry symbols. Haven't you ever wondered about laundry symbols? Well, there's a video which will talk about all of the different, like good solid content. You get what you pay for, and it's like a 10 out of 10. 4,000 people have watched it, and it's like it's just dismal. And I know that it's not going to get views, but I feel so driven to like continue to produce content.
I think that it's needed and it's necessary, and I've also kind of come to the conclusion of that it's not woodworking videos that are performing poorly, or it's not project videos that are performing poorly. It's not educational content that's performing poorly. It's how-to content. So, I mean, there's guys doing really good making project videos on YouTube because the project is crazy, and you know, but it's not a how-to video. They're not trying to teach you how to make this thing, where my videos have always kind of been geared towards teaching, and especially now since I'm coming up with these really elaborate plans that go along with the project, I want that video to be a step-by-step how-to video. And those are the ones that are just people just really don't want to watch. And yeah, I'm getting kind of tired of just seeing that.
I mean, you have to have
9
faith.
Out of 10.
Yeah, right? And you just know it. It's like, this is the good hands-on stuff. Like, this is old Steve. What do you think? Like, it literally, I know that.
But I feel so much better about myself.
That's what matters.
Than doing, coming up with the constant stream of the top 10 videos and these kind of things. It's just.
What is the purpose of the content? I made a video that in a year and a half from now, when someone searches YouTube, they're going to be able to say, how do I read laundry symbols?
Yeah.
And I will get another, we will get another view on a video. And that video exists for that purpose and will always fulfill that purpose. And it was fascinating. We were talking to Robert and he was talking about this, even this, like the mention of a sponsor in a video can just date a video and how it just kind of like ingrains it in time. And it almost like that really got me onto this whole thought about like self-aware, like, why are you making this? Are you making this because you're trying to sell a tool? Are you making this because you're trying to like get more followers on Instagram? Because every time you say that in your video, you are literally showing that intention. And I realized that all the calls to action that we tell people to do are all these like distracting things and da da da. And it just took away from the content. Okay, so now we don't do the, I'm Melissa Maker, a cleaning expert, and because it's like, okay, maybe not every video needs to. So again, adjusting all the things that even sometimes were like best practice and now just like dismissing them to like get authenticity, to get to show that it's like, guys, we're like, this video isn't about trying to sell you a microfiber cloth. This video is, you know, literally in its own. And there's, I think, too many videos out there which are either aspirational intentionally because it's grandiose. I spent $100,000 on a hotel. This is what I got. Well, of course, you're going to get views, or you're going to get the I bought $2 thing from the store and I sold it for $10,000. And again, it's all just aspirational views. The people who are actually watching something to learn how to do it, I don't know. Either they're not around, but I have faith that sooner or later we're going to get back to people wanting to do something as opposed to just watching other people do things.
Yeah, I think that the, for some reason, it's content that used to work, how-to content used to work on YouTube. And I think a lot of it, and this is also, I kind of think to your point, is that this may be a kind of a good niche to get into right now, is because everybody's bailing out of it. So maybe
this is the other side.
We'll be the people providing the how-to content.
This is the other side of everybody buried in their fucking phones, and they will pull their head away from their phones and realize the beautiful sky ahead of them. And they will either be like, you know what? I'm going to go learn how to fly a kite today, or I'm going to learn about the sky, or I'm going to whatever. I'm going to go outside and do, I'm going to do something other than like just watch the next video. So yes, I am banking on that, Steve. And I hope we're right.
I'm happy with what I'm doing right now. I love making the projects. I love making the videos. In fact, this video I'm working on right now, it's actually a remake of a project I did like 11 years ago. This is lately I've been doing these voiceover ones. I've been trying to do the whole voiceover thing so I get the longer videos. This one I'm going back to my regular, just talk to the camera. If I have any voiceover, I'll shoot it right then. I'll do the voiceover live on the camera. And it's so refreshing for me to do this because it's so much faster. I love being able to edit while I'm shooting. Mm. So I'm halfway through this project and I've already got it edited up to this point, you know, so I don't have to think about going back after I've shot everything and then trying to describe, oh, here I'm I'm driving a nail.
Ooh.
Which I don't do.
You can put in sound effects.
Anyways, I'm just kind of happy. I'm kind of like kind of reeling it back and doing old school videos.
It's almost like you're proud of your content. That's how it feels like.
Damn.
It's like, great. Yeah. I'm certainly not glad that it's not getting crazy views, but that is much more, that's way offset by me just searching for the video that I just put up there and having that video come up on a very specialized kind of term.
Maybe this is part of my intentionality, you know, and I'm trying to live more intentionally, and maybe this is it, you know. This kind of bleeds into the work I do too, and just being intentional about what it is I want to produce and who I'm interested in watching it, and trying to not be so concerned with those damn 9 out of 10 numbers, you know.
And being proud of the products that you're producing.
Mm-hmm.
And gauging the success of them on the response, but gauging on what you put out there.
It's really funny remaking these old videos, though. Nobody knows. Nobody is. It's one of these things. I really thought people would see, like, oh, well, you're just running out of ideas. You're remaking the. No. Nobody's. It's kind of a reality check. It's like, no, those people who were watching those videos 10 years ago, they ain't watching my videos today. It's very few of them. But see, by remaking these old videos, now I can come up with a new set of plans for these that I can sell at the premium prices, where since I've been giving them away, I don't really want to all of a sudden start charging for a plan that I've been giving away for all this time.
And you can approach the project, 10 years after, like, you've mastered, like, at this point, you're like
so much better.
Your end products are exactly, you've gone through every variation.
Yeah, because every project has those little things that, I wish I had done this differently. Now I get my chance to do that differently and fix it.
There you go. Well, I mean, we're doing the same thing over here with cleaning videos, and let's keep marching to our own beat, Steve Ramsey.
You know, when you started talking way back at the beginning of this episode about watches, here's how I'll leave this show with this. Being, you were talking about earrings back in the 80s, but it was like a signifier.
It was.
So apparently wristwatches were the same way. In old movies from like the 1920s and stuff, a guy wearing a wristwatch, that was like a sign that, oh, this guy is gay.
Really?
He's effeminate. Because real men wore pocket watches, yeah.
And that's the other thing. Gay was just effeminate. It didn't even matter if you were gay or not. If you were just a
confirmed bachelor. I always like that expression.
Oh, we were such backwards, stupid people.
All right. We'll end this show now that I just kind of went off rail and went right back to where we... That was a non sequitur.
Look, we actually... Pre-